So we will let you guys take it from here. Adam, I don't know if you have anything you want to kick off with, but Adam is at
I
your
spent,
service for the next while.
yes, I spent the weekend in Vegas, or I should say from Thursday through Saturday night in Vegas at Vision Expo doing 5 hours of continuing education on practice management. And so I've had like 5 hours of scheduled talks and presentations and then rapid fire Q&A over the weekend. So I'm not going to invoke any more. I'm not going to be the one to proactively get this started. So this is an AMA session. You feel free to ask me anything. I did tell Allison prior to this. I said, I didn't get any tags in Tribe, so I don't know how many questions we have. And I looked in there and it's like, oh, ask me anything. There's a goose egg there. Congratulations, we did our job in Limitless. You have solved all of your problems and you have clarity on everything that you need to do going forward. Yay for you. Good job. Obviously, that is dripping with sarcasm because we are never done doing this. We are always either just learning or succeeding. So, happy to again just make this your time and be as advantageous or make it as advantageous for you as possible.
What you're saying is you've prepared a 90-minute monologue for us, essentially.
Don't test me.
Don't
Don't
test
test
you.
me.
Yeah. No, I know Adam. You could probably fill it with 90 minutes, huh?
I did. So the latest episode of 2020, or not the latest, I think it was 1 or 2 weeks ago, I did, without getting into a whole backstory, there's let's just call it some misunderstandings in the optometry space about just how advisors work and how financial services are set up. And there's a push in a couple of groups that, oh, we have people that are licensed. In our group, we have people that are licensed financial consultants, as opposed to quote unquote just a bunch of ODs that happen to spend a lot of time on Reddit boards and Bogleheads and things like that. So they're saying this, oh, because ours are licensed. And in the podcast, it basically like with all due respect, let me talk to you what licensed means. A reasonably smart high schooler could study for a weekend and pass the life insurance and annuity exam and be considered licensed. In a couple of weekends, I could probably study for the Series 7. A high schooler could study for the Series 7 and become licensed. So let's kind of reset expectations around what licensed means. So that episode was a 65-minute monologue on undressing financial services. So yes, Allison, to your point, if you gave me 90 minutes, I could probably fill it with I make no claim to the actual substance there and whether it'll
Yeah.
actually be valuable, but.
It would be a brain dump from Adam.
Right?
Okay. Well, everyone, the Zoom Q&A is now open.
I
So
know
feel
what everybody's
free.
doing. Everybody is just like, this was their trigger and their mental, the mental trigger, like, oh, that's right. I need to register for 2024 right now. So everybody has the enrollment sheet up right now that is going through questions on 2024 enrollment. So that's probably what they're spending their time doing, Allison.
All right. That is such a great thought, Adam, for sure. Speaking
Adam,
of which, I can, oh, go ahead, Michelle.
I was just going to say, I do have a question for you, Adam, if that's cool.
Go ahead, Michelle. Let's have some
All
fun.
right. In Denver, you and I had a conversation about when you first started in your niche, you were, for all intent and purposes, you were cold calling some of the prospects and saying, can you please help me understand your world? This is not a sales pitch. It's a help me help you. Okay. Can you walk through what you did, how you found these people, how you contacted them? Because I don't have, all I have are LinkedIn connections. So I can message them on LinkedIn, but I don't have email. I don't have any phone numbers. Should I do the LinkedIn? You know, should I message them that way? What was your approach? And then what are kind of your thoughts for what I could do?
So I had the benefit of having a professional association, right? The American Optometric Association. Then there's the Indiana Optometric Association, and then there are local societies that kind of cover a smaller geographic area. So that was just a cold call to the Indiana Optometric Association, and then getting introductions to the pres or getting names through the website of the presidents of the local societies, calling them up. I Googled where the optometry practice is in our area, and I called them up. I hate to say that it was like dialing for dollars, but essentially that's what it was. It was just making cold calls, and I had the ability, or I had that, right? This is 20, you know, Google is I just Googled it. I just started researching and pulling up phone numbers and pulling up names. I don't know how that translates directly to what you have the ability to do. It may require getting a little creative in doing it on LinkedIn, either through LinkedIn, depending on if you're connected to these people in any other type of Facebook group or other social media channels. You could consider messaging them via Twitter, via direct messenger in, or via a messenger in Facebook. Again, if you're on a one-on-one relationship with, or on a one-on-one basis with these people, or if you have the opportunity to somehow get access to a phone number, making the cold call and doing it that way. I did the same thing when I was, before optometry with CVS. Again, a little bit different just because CVS was, you can walk into a CVS pharmacy, but I created my CVS bus route. Essentially, I mapped out what was the maximum number of CVSs that I could hit in the shortest duration from a drive standpoint. So I kind of turned it into my own bus route, and I would walk into CVSs, and I had this packet of information about the ABCs and 123s of how non-qualified stock options work, because at the time their comp, this was 2009, 2010, 2011. That's how their comp was structured, or that's how their equity comp was paid out, was in non-qualified options. And if you go back and you look at the history of CVS's stock price from 2010 through the late teens, they did very well with options. And I would just drop into the pharmacy. And then as it pertained to leadership, Indianapolis had a RBO, a regional business office. So I searched online, I called the CVS RBO, got to know the phone tree operator, and asked for to be passed through to Doug Pelletier and Maureen Cormier and Everett Moore, like the leadership there. Just but it was cold calling, Michelle. I really don't have any other secret sauce other than that. The questions that I asked, I know we have that poster, and I know we have that list somewhere in the library, likely under the niche marketing lesson, where I have like a 2-page document that was just comprised of the questions that I would ask in those conversations.
Okay. So short of having phone numbers and I can't stop into their work office, it is just kind of messaging them on LinkedIn or something like that. Any thoughts on how I go about that?
The hard part in something like that is the how is this going to be valuable to them, right? This is it. How many of us have ever gotten an email, LinkedIn connection request? You get the connection request, and then the first message that you get from them is, "Let me book 5 to 10 qualified prospects per month." Or
right.
I'd like to talk to you about how I can help you, it's a me conversation. That's what typically those sales conversations have. So it's one of those things that it's a fine line of asking for the appointment, asking for the conversation, but doing it in a somewhat non-intrusive way. I am not the proverbial LinkedIn expert on how to do that, Michelle. I wish I had better strategy for you, but I'm smart enough to know that I can't know everything. I would try and do it in a way that is like, how do we make that valuable to them? And let's crowdsource this as well. If others have ideas or suggestions, if you've tried to build, or if you've been successful in building a LinkedIn audience and to the point that you've been able to translate those into one-on-one conversations, I am all ears, because I have not tried to do that, nor have I clearly been successful in doing that, because I've never tried it. So anybody else have any previous experience that they can help Michelle or share with Michelle? Blazing the trail on your own, Michelle.
Okay. Well, I have reached out to a couple people, and it was just like you're saying, you asked them, 10 questions about their plan and how you could help them. When I messaged them. The email was all about, how can I help you? I'm doing market research kind of thing. I just want to learn how I can help you. And I said, it's not a sales call. So it was, the message was about them and helping them and their coworkers, but then nobody replied. Right. So, and I only sent out, I think, two or three messages like that to try it.
How many times do you follow up?
Oh, none. I didn't think of that, because they ignored my message the first time. I just assumed that meant they weren't. Okay.
To know until you try again. I mean, you don't want to become abusive with it. Obviously I would do no more than three follow-ups, but I would certainly do one more follow-up.
Okay.
And give them permission to say no as well. I mean, feel free to say, look, you won't hurt my feelings. If this is not something of interest to you, please let me know. I will certainly want to respect your inbox. You know, give them permission to engage with you in some aspect.
Okay.
And I would do more than two or three.
Two or three people?
Yes. There should be a zero in front of that, at least.
Okay. Fair enough.
I mean, I called probably 20 different practices in the Indianapolis area. I talked to Jim Ziba, who was the president of the IOA at the time. He's since retired. I called local societies. I called frame reps, or drug and frame reps. By the way, those are the easiest people to call to. They'll always answer their phone. Drug reps, sales reps, frame reps. Like they're in the contact sport business. So those are the low hanging fruit calls. Not saying that, again, you have access to those, but
right.
Yeah. You're going to be making dozens and dozens and dozens of outreach calls. It's not going to be I called five or six people to try and get this, or I emailed, I marketed five or six people. This is a full court press.
Okay. So add a two or three in front of that, right? In front of that
goal.
Number.
Yeah.
Yeah. And give them an out, and then follow up, and then give them an out. So that's what I didn't do. I didn't do the number that you're recommending, and I never thought of following up, because I just assumed, since I didn't say anything, they were just take it as a no.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. That's the reason you're the goat. Thank you.
hardly, but thank you. Boy, quiet morning.
Yeah. No questions in the Q&A either. We need to call.
Is this what they're all like? I mean, certainly when you're doing these with Steph, I mean, or does she just not allow the awkward silence to be there? And
no, she doesn't allow the awkward silence, Adam. You know, Steph. Yeah. So she'll come up with something if no one has a question. But, you know, I think it's good. We'll let anybody.
Oh, Danny, how do I decipher what 10X means for me?
Yeah.
Oh, going deep on a Monday morning. So we go from nothing to going to something that is like talking about life meaning and right.
Yeah. See how sharp you are Monday morning, Adam.
Bring it on. So can you put a little context around that?
Yeah. It's interesting because, you know, my mindset shifted a lot just through Limitless. You know, I came in wanting to outsource everything, never wanted to hire or manage anyone. So I've hired my first employee, client service advisor or associate, to help me service clients. And I launched my marketing funnel, had the first event, and I have about 100,000 in revenues and prospects in the pipeline, which is great. So I feel like starting to move forward here. Realize, you know, you mentioned another book, Who Not How, and I read that before too. And that really kind of started drilling the point home for me about, hey, I really got to get out of my head and start delegating more. And I was doing a good job automating, but just delegating more. So, you know, I'm thinking now this funnel, I know it's going to work. I want to basically hold an event every month next year. And the CSA is just going to help me service clients and do planning and onboard all these new prospects. So, you know, I'm starting to think of what the future of the business is going to look like. And, you know, initially it's like, okay, well, lifestyle practice, and I'll probably have two employees. And so my next hire I'm thinking is going to be like a practice operations manager. And then I could just continue doing marketing and focusing on the stuff I want to focus on. I can grow the business, and I think I'll get to at least $1 million in gross revenue in 2 years from today. Right now I'm at about 450 in AUM. So okay. I have to double that essentially, but I'm pretty confident in the marketing channel. But after reading that book, I'm starting to question whether I want to have a lifestyle practice anymore, and do I want to scale this up? And obviously that takes a whole different approach to the business and all these different decisions. And so I don't know, man, that book got me twisted. I thought I was totally clear and then I read that book and I'm just like totally confused again. So
just when you think you have it all figured out, then you read something that just flips it on a dime, right? None of the only thing that's constant is change. I think the part that gets missed from 10X, 10X is easier than 2X is, or maybe it's not the part that gets missed, but it's the easiest thing to do is to automatically assume that 10X equals more. But that more money, more clients, more revenue, more, right? 10X can actually mean less of something. Mm-hmm. Right. So if we break that down to the four pillars of what Dan talks about in Strategic Coach, the freedom of purpose, time, money, and relationships, building a lifestyle practice could very well be 10Xing the exact things that you're solving for by doing things less rather than doing things more. Mm-hmm. So I think if we just simply fall to the formulaic definition of, oh, I need to 10x, it means I automatically need to increase something. One, like, then every one of us would be building $10 million plus firms, because the whole value add, or the whole pitch, for lack of a better word, of lifestyle is, right, build $1 million business and 100 day off business, or $1 million 100 day off practice that you love. But if we're all telling you to 10x, well, in the absence of context around what the message truly is, then we would say, oh, we're here to help you build $10 million businesses and enterprises, which we know that there are but a handful of limitless advisors that truly are trying to build enterprise type scalable practices. So I think the concept of, and I'll bring Michelle back into the conversation. She'll love me for going here. And I can say this because this is actually a recorded conversation that's already on the Limitless Library. Was having a conversation with Michelle in one of our one-on-ones, and we were going through my model practice, right? What's the revenue need to be and things like that. And she shared the number, and then I asked her, I said, well, why is it that number? She's like, well, it was originally this one, but then Steph told me to double it. And I said, no, Michelle, the idea there of doubling it was the exercise of mentally expanding what we think and accept as being possible versus what is actually what we're actually capable of doing. I think 10X is a derivative of that. It's simply the framework on how we think about what we're truly solving for in life, and to get us thinking so outside the box that the handful of things that we need to do to radically move the needle are usually right in front of us. So I would say, based off what you're saying is that, like, okay, so your paradoxical journey for 2024 is, what is the 10x shift that needs to occur in order to do 10 marketing events per month? Well, there's 10x, right? A marketing event per month, so 12 of them, without working an hour more than what I'm doing right now. Who, which feeds right back into who, right? Then, so who do you need to solve for in the business? If you're going to do 10 times, essentially kind of what you're doing, you're going to do 10 times the marketing events next year than you're doing this year. But one of the rocks that you are not willing to compromise on is working more or having a team to manage, because you don't want to be in that role. Well, then it's a matter of being incredibly intentional around hiring absolute rock star contractors that are not employees. So is that then spending the money on a great executive assistant through Athena or Belay Solutions is that hiring an events coordinator for, you know, an online webinar events coordinator at $125 an hour? I'm making up a number. I have no idea what the rate would be, right? But a seemingly high value person, so that all you have to do is show up. And you can have 10 times the impact from a marketing standpoint while not compromising conditions about how much time you're going to spend in the practice.
Yeah, yeah. And again, I think that's what I've kind of rested on, at least for this short term. But then again, I keep thinking about this longer term. Hey, am I going to change? Are things going to change? And I think like the main thing there is, I mean, if I have $1 million gross revenue, I think financially, I'm not going to have any concerns anymore, right? So then it's just, okay, what's going to be fulfilling for me? And I think this is going to come down to when I feel like I want to lead other people and like teach other advisors, right? And to help more clients. And so I guess it's going to be when I feel that I'm ready for that. And then that would be a change in the vision of the business, right?
Yeah.
Okay. That helps.
Well, and one thing that I found in my own journey going through that is once the business got more than what we needed on a personal side of things, the way in which you started to find fulfillment in the work that you're doing in the practice certainly changed as well.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my computer is like short circuiting here. Can everybody still hear me okay?
You're freezing here a little bit, but
yeah. There we go. Like my docking station is not happy. Evidently it's still thinking it's the weekend here. So the monitor was flashing, got a green screen on one of the monitors. So, the idea of what you think, and again, I'm one of one. I mean, this is just my own personal experience. So once the growth of the business was A, predictable, and B, the net income of the business was more than what we needed on the personal side of things, how I started thinking about where I wanted to start spending my time became not necessarily a financial question, but more of an impact question.
Yep. Okay. I think I'm on the same track. So.
So. Good deal. You're welcome. You're welcome. Thanks for the question. All right, Sam, getting feedback, rebranding, and I'm looking to hire someone to create an amazing website and a logo. In conversation with Greg, any other suggestions? The only other one that I haven't had personal experience with, but I've known other advisors that have and have had a decent experience with is Tiny Frog out in San, I believe they're San Diego. There is, oh gosh, who? Ethan, I think I saw you on the call. You just went through a rebrand with your firm as well, didn't you? How was that with a design firm? How was that experience?
Let me unmute. Can you hear me okay?
Yep, you're all good.
We had a great experience as a group. They're in Oklahoma called Lawton, LAWTON Marketing Group. It's a lady named Kelly Edwards who's in charge of that team. And what they did for us is kind of structured a package where they spent about 2 hours on the front end interviewing myself and my dad, Terry, about how we engage with our clients, our vision for the future, our brand, our messaging, our personalities, and then brought all that together into the website, which we're super happy and pleased with. We felt they were able to capture kind of all the different catchphrases, taglines, kind of the things that we say one off here and there, and brought it and put it together in a concise message that really reflects kind of the message we're trying to convey to people. So we had a really positive experience with them.
Good. Good. Did they do a logo rebrand for you as well? Or was it quote unquote just on a market or just on the website side of things?
It was just on like brand story and brand vision in the website. They did not do any of the logo redesign, or they do offer like if you need help picking out a new name, they do offer those services. We just didn't use them.
Okay. I would also, while I certainly can't speak to any of the firms that would be listed or affiliated with them, the process of telling and Explaining Your Brand Through the Story Brand Process by Donald Miller. This is a good book and just kind of talks through from a marketing standpoint about how to think about your brand and through storytelling, which for us is, as advisors, being able to tell the story because we have an intangible product is even more important. So I believe through Donald's website, I think they have like an affiliate, or you can become essentially a story brand affiliated design firm that goes through some type of a vetting process. Again, I can't put my name or a recommendation per se next to any one of those firms that might be affiliated with it. I can speak for the book and for the process itself.
Excellent. Thank you. Yeah, like you're I said, welcome. I thought I'd just, I know there are resources on the limitless in the library, but I thought I'd ask the group if, about your experiences. So thank you, Ethan.
Yeah, right. No problem. I did interview a lady that was connected with the story brand process as part of our thing, but it, what I found, and I'm sure there's somebody out there that has it set up better, but it was going to be more disjointed. It was, you had to work with somebody and kind of flesh out the story brand part. And then you would have to go find somebody else that was familiar with story brand to implement that into the website. And so it felt very disjointed from the people I found that did it. So then that's what kind of, we ended up going a different route. So.
Okay. 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 Good feedback. Appreciate that. Guillermo, I saw your hand up. Did you have a question? Comment or
just a quick question? Thank you. No, which I'm just curious. The question is to Danny, Michael, what type of events, marketing events, are you doing, Danny?
I'm just teaching in person classes. I teach I taught a class called Taxes and Retirement at a local college, and so. Yeah, I just taught the class, and I used to do this for my old firm, so I'm very familiar with it. I know it works, so I kind of had a pretty decent process in place to do it, and so but there's a lot of moving parts to it. I think just like any marketing funnel, you know. Just,
are you using White Glove?
No.
Okay.
Are you doing it through a like university extension program, adult learning community, or any type of education?
You know what I did. Yeah, there's a lot of vendors that offer class materials and mailers and whatnot to get people to come to these classes. Essentially, you have to send out a direct mailer. It's old school. So you're sending out a direct mailer to 7,500 to 10,000 households. So it's expensive. Costs about, you know, anywhere from $5,000 to $10,000 for to run a class. But it's, what I've done is I found a nonprofit that offers lots of different types of classes. They already have materials, and they actually take care of the mailer and they take care of the registration for the lot of the attendees. So it's fairly turnkey. And so I've partnered with them, and so far that's worked out really, really well. I just tried it once, and so it's had good results. So
nice. Yeah. Nice.
Thank you.
Old school still works.
Yeah.
Being in person still works. It's not as scalable, but it still has a very, very good ROI and impact.
Yeah. I think it's interesting because, you know, people coming to an educational class, getting an invitation from a nonprofit, a lot of them are there to learn. A lot of them are not necessarily ready to buy. So it's a different type of buyer that you're going to get, right? Some people are just there to learn. Some people might not be qualified, you know, versus if you have like a podcast or digital strategy where people really kind of warm up to you for a long time and then they contact you. I think they're kind of more ready. You know, they kind of know, hey, this is my guy. As long as everything checks out, I'm going to go with this person. Right. So it's a different process. You really got to kind of, you know, so I do kind of a lot of analysis up front to show them all the value for moving over to me. It's interesting. And I don't want to make this tough marketing call, but I'll just say one thing. What's interesting about doing this is it kind of reminds me, you know, I'm an XYPN and AGC and Limitless, and we are all these really smart advisors and everyone's doing a freaking awesome job. And I want to do what everyone else is doing, but you realize that the most people out there have crap advisors, a bunch of overpriced products. Right. And that's what the average person has. And so there's still a lot of opportunity out there, and you know, just teaching a class, most of the people that I meet with, they're just have a, an advisor is giving them investment advice. I'm going to do comprehensive financial planning for less of a fee. So it's a hard value for if someone's ready to buy and they come to that class or they're looking for someone, chances are you're going to have a good chance of closing them. So
I appreciate you bringing that up because I think it's interesting how I had that kind of epiphany 2 weeks ago, and it was shortly after XYPN Live. And then I had a triage call with a new client again, never count until the check actually hits, but likely coming on board. And it's got like 400-ish or so at Wells Fargo, paying 1.5. And like, yeah, we get together once a year to go over things. And like, you're paying 1.5 to get together once a year to do largely investment-based or investment-focused conversations.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Well, not only that, you know, I think advisors that just focus on investment advice, especially at those banks, because I worked in those bank channels, I know how it goes. Like they have too many clients. So there's no consistency with, like she's a JP Morgan advisor. She hasn't talked to him since before COVID. She's paying whatever, 1.4% and getting any value. Yeah. So it's just like, hey, here's the value. Here's all the stuff we're going to do, tax planning, right? Social security planning, all these things that you're not getting and you're paying more. Mm-hmm.
Your point, because we spend all this time in these communities, we think that all advisors that we hang out with are like us, and we are the exception, not the norm.
Right. And that's the thing. I'll say another thing about digital strategy. I think if someone is finding you and they're getting you, they're probably doing a lot of research and they're probably interviewing other, or, you know, at least listening to other advisors and whatnot. I forgot my point, what I was going to make about that, but.
Where I think you're going with it, like if they're digital, they're listening to other advisors, that there might be a little bit more parity between what you do versus what they do. But if they come to an in-person event where all they've been used to has been the analog version of the advisor, there's likely a much bigger delta between what you can deliver versus what they've been experiencing.
Exactly what I wanted to say. Thank you for wording that I could.
I had a feeling that's where you're going with it.
Yeah.
And cool. Thanks for the feedback. Jeremy, does that help?
Oh, yes. Thank you. That was for me. Sorry. Yeah, I didn't come out clear. Yes. Thank you very much.
Okay. Good deal. All right, Kevin, what are we using for voice note-taking service, AI during surge meetings? We were looking at Otter. Tiff, in conversation with Tiff and Jared, Otter would not release the full terms of some detailed questions that they had about the terms of service. So that was their, all right, well, if they're not going to play that game, then they're not going to use that. We're using, right now we went back to utilizing Mobile Assistant as the Band-Aid. We're still experimenting with Fireflies as a way to capture that note information. I will die on this proverbial hill that having two advisors in every single client meeting is horribly inefficient and a waste of time. I believe that you can communicate the team approach and the fact that the client knows that they are working with a team in different ways other than paying full freight for two advisors to be in a client meeting, if for no other reason that the firm doesn't have a seamless way to have the left hand know what the right hand is doing, right? If John's in a meeting with a client, there should be a system in place that allows him to communicate to Kate, our number two advisor, our second chair, our CSA, to know what came out of that appointment. To use the medical analogy, and I could, whether it's dermatology or it's optometry or dentistry or whatever that is, optometry is the perfect example for it because the optician is not sitting. Think about the last time that you had an eye exam, right? Hopefully you can remember. Hopefully it hasn't been that long. When you had your eye exam, the optician was not in the eye exam with you, if for no other reason that the doctor couldn't communicate to the optician what needed to get done. No, what happened is you had your eye exam with your doctor. They took notes. They had a decent handoff from the chair to the optical. The same thing should happen in our profession. So all that to say, we're experimenting in how we best do that. Right now, we went back to Mobile Assistant. So John, after a meeting, will dictate notes. They get transcribed. Usually it only takes a day, maybe two, for those notes to get back to us. Kathy, in our 3M meeting this morning, or in our level 10, L10, any traction fans out there, she just gave us the update that over the last week and a half, Mobile Assistant has unfortunately been taking like sometimes 2 to 3 days to transcribe notes, which is a little not cool. Hopefully that decreases and comes back down, but I still do want to figure out a way, and I'm still using Mobile Assistant, or not Mobile Assistant, I'm still using Fireflies myself personally, just to try and tweak the system and get a better understanding of how we can use it firm-wide. So long explanation, Kevin, but happy to dialogue with you anymore if you have any follow-up questions or points of clarity that I can provide.
No, that was great. Thank you, Adam. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. The point out of that is you need to have something. Copy Talk, Mobile Assistant, open up your phone and dictate into something, like typing notes, unless you are someone that's doing 100 words a minute, if not more typing. I will, again, die on this hill as well, that using some type of dictation service is far more efficient than typing.
Yeah, just curious if you had just found something better since you were having some issues. And so always looking to improve what we have. So.
Yeah, the issue that we had with Fireflies and that we're still trying to figure out how to work out is because if you were launching and creating meetings directly in Zoom, then it integrated perfectly with Fireflies. But because the Zoom meetings are being booked by virtue of a client booking a calendar appointment, so Acuity is the one that actually generates the meeting Zoom link, which Fireflies doesn't see because the appointment isn't natively being scheduled through Zoom. Then what we found is that not every meeting was being captured by Fireflies, which then required John to invite Fireflies to every single client appointment. And even then, sometimes we would find it that when he would invite it, and we get the meeting summary, it would say speaker one, speaker two, speaker three. Like if it was John, Kate, and then the client in the call, we would see speaker one, speaker two, speaker three under the meeting summary. And it just became more cleanup than what it was worth, because then Kathy was having to spend the time after that cutting and pasting and substituting versus Mobile Assistant came through no issues. So like I said, it's those little bugs that you see on Twitter and Facebook and things like that of advisors, I'm going to run a $1 billion RIA with two people and three and a piece of AI. It's like, yeah, that's where I invoke the phrase an architect's dream is an engineer's nightmare. Like it's awesome to pontificate or to just get on your social media soapbox and say that that's how it's going to work. But until you actually plug it in and start realizing all the little gremlins that need to be flushed out, I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm just saying it's not that easy. So, Ethan, good point. So we still do mainly in-person meetings. I'm the one who is in charge of taking notes. Is there anything out there that would accomplish what Fireflies or Otter is doing for in-person meeting note capture? Yeah, you could have your, I don't know if Fireflies has a mobile app, and I know you can do it on a tablet. Have the computer open and just have a Zoom meeting open and have Fireflies in the Zoom meeting and you're just on speakerphone. So you're having the conversation with the client. It's probably not going to pick up. It might not be able to find or be able to discern you versus the client because there's only one participant in the Zoom meeting. That would be the initial gut thought or the initial off the cuff response of how to think about that. The other way to do that would be to, you could use Fireflies as these, and there might be a solution out there that already does this, but through the filter of Fireflies, open up Firefly. Like if I'm in Fireflies right now, I can launch a meeting from Fireflies. If I go back to my dashboard. Yeah, I can kick off a meeting right here. And essentially launch a Zoom meeting from Fireflies and use that Zoom meeting as essentially my dictation service. So you could, after the client meeting, open up Fireflies, click record, do a 3 to 5 minute narration, get the meeting summary, and then write down and then use that as essentially the meeting summary notes.
All right. Thanks.
Yep. Anybody else? We're only halfway done, my friends. We still have 45 minutes.
Adam, I have another question. If no one else, I don't want to hog all the time here.
Let her rip.
All right. So I met with a prospect and his wife, two meetings. We did the whole, why is money important to you? She cried. It was, you know, because Carl Richards always says somebody's going to cry in the meeting, but it's not going to be me, right? So it was, she was crying. We went over, you know, why money is important. Had the second meeting where I presented the one-page plan, and we talked about different ways we could work together. So then I sent them, and they decided at that meeting, she said, you know, I really appreciate you. We want to move forward. So I emailed them and I said, okay, we just need your social security number and just a couple, whatever it was, just to get started. So then 2 or 3 weeks went by and I emailed him again. And he finally replied and said, sorry for the slow response. He said, unfortunately, my wife is not on board with the plan, but I would like your help on, I don't know, investment management, he said, and minimizing my taxes in retirement.
Okay. So your question is, should you work with just him and not her?
Well, I don't think I would work with just him and not her, because if she's not on board, I don't think it's going to work. At first, I was very irritated that he was never replying. And then when he replied, no, at first I was upset almost that they weren't responding and like jumping at the opportunity to work with me. Then I was irritated, right? So, what I'm guessing is when they said that she's not on board with the plan, and I'm putting my own spin to this, I'm guessing that she's not on board with the fees is my take.
Yeah, you don't know that.
No, I don't. So after he replied to me, I sent the email back and I just said, you know, it sounds like we need to have a conversation about how we can get Ann on board and what exactly you would like me to do to help you. And how I can help you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's an underlying reason there, right? And the worst thing that we can do is be presumptuous as to why she's not comfortable. Can you help me understand that a little bit more? Is there something that changed from the first conversation to the last to why she's now not comfortable? Because my interpretation of the way that we left that meeting was that there was fill in the blank feelings, right? Maybe insert the joking comment there of, I usually don't intend on people crying, but typically crying invokes a certain level of emotion that is, I'm not sure how to wordsmith that off the fly or off the cuff right here in the call, but when people are hesitant to make a decision, it's because, or they're not wanting to tell you a direct no, which I guess she is telling you direct no. I would see if there's a reason why, and always emphasize when we have this issue of like, well, my wife isn't really going to be involved in the conversation because we're talking with him as a practice owner. And I'll say, yes, that's fine. We can talk to, we won't include her in the practice management conversations and the business conversations. But when we talk about the personal side, we will ask her to participate because we know that she has goals. We know that she has feelings around this as well. We certainly want to meet her where she's at in this process. So we don't really allow, for lack of a better word, for people to be truly disjointed, okay, right? Where we're only working with one spouse.
Okay. Now, and I will say this may have been where I maybe messed up or could have improved. I don't know, you know, whatever the word is. It was in the second meeting where I said, well, this is how we can proceed. This is how I get paid. This is what we can do. Maybe if I would have said that up front, then we wouldn't have had, you know, they would know that the fees weren't in line with what they were thinking, and they would, I don't know, maybe wouldn't have.
I wouldn't really get beat up too much about where you position the fee conversation. There are some advisors that are transparent with it and put it on their website. I've chosen to make to do it on the back end after we've had an opportunity to show up and deliver value through the initial triage conversation and obviously through the podcast and all the other ways in which we've promoted and positioned. But I mean, maybe there's a deeper conversation there about the close, about the language that you're using in the, this is what it means to take next. This is what it means to take the next step. And maybe it just might be a clarifying question. Can you help me understand why she's not on board?
Okay.
And see what, and leave it as open-ended as possible from that point forward.
And I think that's what I've done is how can we get her on board? And we need to have a conversation because emailing back and forth isn't going to fix it. And if she's not on board, he and I shouldn't go forward because he's going to hear about it from her. I mean, there's just going to be kind of discontent in the marriage and that or over the fact that he wants to proceed. So I just, okay.
Yeah, it's not going to create the best experience for everybody involved.
Right, exactly. Don't assume it's the fees. Okay. And you think whether you position the fees up front at the end, you do it on the back end though?
Yeah. Yeah, we do it at the end of our triage call, at the end of the 45-minute triage call that we have. Again, that's predicated because we've got the process ironed out. We've done a lot of educating about the value aspect through the marketing. And the initial and the reason, kind of to what Danny had pointed out, the reason, like, we've nurtured them enough through the content creation that the ones that are reaching out to talk with us are essentially just figuring out, do I really want to work with these people, and what's the next step involved?
Okay. All right.
If you're doing the one-page plan and following the traditional prospecting process that we have in place, then there's nothing wrong with putting the fee conversation at the end of the one-page plan presentation where you're talking about how you can help them implement not only the recommendations that we've gone through in this abbreviated planning process, but also as we get further in our relationship, the things that we haven't even talked about, if for no other reason that I haven't gotten all that information already. I built this one-page plan just on a handful of documents that I've asked you to provide. Imagine what I'll be able to do with everything in front of us.
Ooh, that's a good point. Okay.
So, okay.
All right. Yeah. So I guess my next move is just letting him reply to the email and I'm going to
and booking a call.
And I'm going to do this 3-strike rule that Stephanie talks about. I'm not going to chase this guy. If she's not on board, she's not on board.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. You can't want it more than they do. Can't push a rope.
Okay. All right, cool. Thank you.
Can't push a rope. Yep. And you'd be surprised on that third one when you truly tell them, you know, to respect your inbox. And I came up with this line. My goal is always to be a welcome pest or welcome guest instead of an annoying pest. So this email will essentially be the last outreach proactively that I'll do. I'll leave the ball in your court going forward. We're not going anywhere. So if or when the time works right for you that you would like to re-engage in conversation, please feel comfortable reaching out either by responding to this email or giving our office a call at blah, blah, blah number. When you send that and essentially tell someone that you don't need them, they're like, wait, we want to be wanted. So that third email, I wouldn't be surprised if that is the one that, if they go radio silent on you, that would be the one that potentially would get them back in the game.
Okay, cool. Thanks.
And last thing on that, don't get hung up on just that one prospect, right? Don't forget about all the other marketing activities to make this one, if they don't come to fruition, that much less important, because you have the activities on the calendar that you actually can control the outcome of, which is your proactive outreaches, your phone calls, your top 20 prospects, your COIs that you can continue to nurture, right? All of those things that you do have control over. Don't forget about those, because the more momentum you have behind those, the less, if this doesn't come to fruition, the less this stings.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Yeah.
I want it to happen for you, but I also, right, until the check clears, it's a no until the check clears.
Yeah.
Hopium is a very powerful drug in the advisory business.
Amen. All right. Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome. Danny, Solo to Team, what books are resources? Traction, great book, overkill for a lot of advisors, but it gives a good framework and idea for thinking about the business. Let's see. There's, from a team standpoint, this maybe isn't applicable. No, that's not applicable. You're not looking to fire anybody. Multiplication Through Subtraction by Shannon Waller is a good book for anybody that is even that is on the fence about, like, oh, do I have the right person on the team? Do I not? That's a good team book. I'm just looking at the shelf here to see if there's anything that comes to mind. I mean, Traction is a great book. Don't get me wrong. It's just like the actual systems of Traction, like the L10 meeting, everybody should be doing an L10, even if you only have one other person. What are the big rocks that you're focused on? Putting guardrails around it. We call ours a 3M meeting, right? Monday morning meeting. Every Monday, 10 a.m. That's essentially our L10 meeting. I can't think of one book that was like, oh yeah, this is the book that helped. It's a combination of all of them. And I know that's not the answer that you're looking for.
That's all right. I mean, whatever would be helpful. I mean, just to help kind of, like, a lot of the books you've recommended really help shape my perspective. So
good.
So I like your book recommendation. So I'm sure whatever it's going to be, it's going to be helpful. So,
well, this will be recorded, so I can just kind of, I'm looking at the Great Game of Business by Jack Slack. I didn't read the entire book, kind of thumbed through that one. Scaling Up by Vern Harnish is another, again, more, that one is admittedly more textbook than it is. I mean, it reads like a textbook. It's not novel form. I love, from a peer advisory perspective, Practice Made More Perfect by Mark DeBergen. That's admittedly a dated one, but the update to that one is The Enduring Advisory Firm, both those by Mark DeBergen. And those are books that are, again, very advisor focused, obviously. And it's going to encompass all different aspects of running the business, not just the financial, or excuse me, not just the team aspect to it. Six Types of Working Genius by Patrick Lencioni. That's one of my favorite books it's recency bias because it was one of the last ones that I just finished. That one's really good for anybody that is trying to figure out that you have a team and you're trying to figure out, like, how does my team lean into what they're really, really just naturally good at doing? And on the other side of that, how do I take things that are incredible points of friction for them off their plate? We went through the Working Genius exercise and we all took the quiz. The interesting thing about the Working Genius from our team is that we don't have any galvanizers on our team. So there's six types of Working Genius. There's wonders, there's the innovators, there's the discerners, there's galvanizers, there's tenacity. And what's the sixth one? I'm missing the sixth one. I can't remember the sixth one, but anyway, none of us have galvanizers, which would think of a COO, like the one that's going to rally the team, a sales manager / COO, someone to rally. Like, so we kind of joked with the four of us, like, wow. So what we've learned is that none of us have the genius. And not only do we not have this working genius, but it is actually a point of friction for us of having systems in place to manage and galvanize everybody around a common goal, to which I somewhat snarky, but also a little bit of truth said, well, that's why we built systems. That's why we have our CRM. That's why we have our scorecard of how many clients we brought on, because none of us are really naturally good at doing that. So we have the system hold us accountable to galvanize us around the goal.
What was that one called? That last one?
It's types of working genius.
Types of working genius.
I mentioned this one before from a business standpoint, just purely on the numbers, right? Straight talk, big numbers, or straight talk, simple numbers, straight talk, big profits. And then this one is the six types of working genius. This book, Patrick wrote it in storybook form. So it doesn't read like a traditional business book. Mm-hmm. It's just an entire story about him as a business owner of an advertising firm and what him and the team essentially created it by having an issue in the firm.
But you think like, so like kind of following the rocks in the AOS, like that kind of, yep. Again, I know it's probably all too much again for a small practice, but the basics and the fundamentals is kind of taking a lot of that from Traction and trying to implement.
Yeah.
In the practice.
Yeah. Which is kind of benchmarked off of, or I shouldn't say benchmark, but it follows, it lines up with the principle that, Jim Collins talks about in Good to Great, right? One of the marks of great teams is hiring the best people for the role, clearly defining success, and then getting the hell out of their way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? Delegating, yeah. And being most advised, well, I shouldn't say most. We hear advisors and business, I mean, this happened in my cohort as well, in my coach cohort, where one of the reasons that people struggle with delegation is because they feel like, well, it has to be done my way, and, or no one's going to do it the way that I would be doing it. And my response to that is, who cares how they do it? As long as we're all on the same page about how we define success and they know what lanes, what, you know, what lines they should color inside and when they should get your permission if they're going to deviate outside of that. If everybody's clear on the goal, they know if there's money to be spent, they're clear on what the budget is, they know what the timeline is, you have periodic check-ins, right? From a delegation standpoint, one of the mistakes that I made early on was, like, I think there's, I don't remember who gets credit for this, but it's four levels of delegation, right? Delegation one is the volley back and forth, do this, check back, do this, check back, do this, check back. And then the other side of delegation, level four delegation is, look, I trust you implicitly to just get this job done. You don't have to check in with me. Just let me know when you're done so that we can figure out what the next project's going to be. I made the mistake of having too much trust in the relationship early on by not having a periodic check-in when they get to like the 90% point. And it wasn't because I didn't trust them. It's just that we were still working on our chemistry of a communication standpoint, even though I thought I had communicated clearly what I wanted to be done and how I defined success. I realized that the way they interpreted that communication was a little bit different. So I should have set a check-in at like, okay, get it to this point. Maybe it's 90% done, 95% done. Have one meeting as a QC, QA, you know, quality control, quality assurance check. And then if we're good, then go and run with it.
And then Daniel Sullivan, aside from 10X and 2X and Who Not How, is there any other books that you'd recommend that I read from him?
Screenshot that.
hang on. Speaker view. So he just has a whole collection, basically. So you just read all his books, essentially?
Yeah. Well, Dan has published a book every quarter for the last 15 years, I think.
Oh, wow.
Okay. But they're all these. I probably should have held it like this, so you can actually not have to rotate it. But
so they're kind of small, very digestible, it looks like.
Yeah. Yeah. They're all. He wrote it. So. Coach is located in Toronto, and the goal is that you can read the book on a 1-hour flight from Toronto to ORD to Chicago. So the self-managing company would be a good one.
Mm. That sounds awesome. Realized
that I have Team Success Handbook in here twice, which the Team Success Handbook is an okay. It's a book to share once you have a team on board. to essentially get them thinking like you're thinking? Let's see. That's a good start.
Yeah. Thank you, sir.
I know I probably have others at home that I can't think of right now, but that's a good start.
Cool. Thanks.
You're welcome. Allison, that is not motivation for Steph to think that she needs to write a book every quarter from this point forward, nor is it going to be motivation that I need to write a book every once a quarter.
Adam, look at 3 months.
What was that?
Your book debut will be occurring in 3 months, Adam. You have a timeline
yes,
now.
Yes, it will. Well, I've got... let me get my first one out first and on the optometry side, then we can talk about the business side of things. So
okay, well, we are waiting for a question. I've been getting some personal messages in the chat about the program for next year. So I'm actually going to drop the link in the chat to our page that has all of the details for Limitless 2024. We have our programs, our main program, which is Limitless Lifestyle, and then a few add-ons. If you want to be in Adam's cohort, if you want one-on-one coaching call package, or if you want to attend retreats in person, those are add-ons. So essentially, the lifestyle program is the virtual program, and then you can pick and choose what you most feel like will serve your needs the best. And there's some information on leaders on this page as well, if any of you qualify for that. I did get a few questions at retreat. If the wait list, if you scanned that, that's not signing up. That was just adding you to our wait list. So even if you did that, you still need to technically sign up. Don't just think you're signed up if you scan the wait list. So yeah, Adam, any details about your cohort you might want to share? You have an opportunity to let people know what that'll be here.
Yeah, the intention, and maybe this isn't the best selling point because we haven't been as engaged maybe as we want to today, or maybe everybody's just still on a Monday, still recovering from whatever, whether their team won or lost over the weekend of NFL games. But the idea behind the cohort is kind of what we're talking about here today, more of the in the trenches, following in the path of what we're building here, what I've learned, what I've experimented with, what's worked well, what hasn't worked well, by taking some of the concepts, or some, not some, but a lot of the concepts that we talk about in Limitless, and again, putting them into practice, as well as brainstorming and troubleshooting with you individually and what you're working through. We do anticipate taking some inventory in the beginning to make sure that what you're working on throughout the program is in true alignment with what you're solving for. Right. So if we're having this conversation a year from now, what has to happen in your life for this to be a successful investment, both from time, money, and energy? And maybe a derivative of that question is, like, why are you here? Like, what is that big why? A lot of you know what my big why was when I first started. And then back to the conversation that Danny and I were having earlier, as you reach those different milestones, your definition of success and what you're solving for also changes as well. So I want to take, as part of the cohort, a much more detailed inventory for every single advisor that's going to be in the cohort to make sure that as we're having conversations throughout the year, that what you're asking me and the feedback that I'm giving you is in alignment with what you've said you're solving for. Or truth be told, if that changes throughout the year, we certainly want to know how that changes as well, so that we can make sure that we're working towards the goal that's most important to you. But I do want that to be even more of a, like, I love the idea of having a subsection of Limitless that is like, think the combination of group coaching and mastermind, but all together in one. And I just love the idea of us really rolling up our sleeves, getting into the trenches and having these conversations on a monthly basis.
Awesome. Thanks, Adam. The other add-ons, we are going to be having a coaching pack, which will give you the opportunity to have calls with Natalie or Adam, I think you're included in this. We'll talk about it. And Liz. So if you really want one-on-one personalized call support, that would be the coaching pass add-on. And then we have our retreat workshops, which are essentially like retreat this year, 2-day in-person intensive workshops. We're going to be diving into the material a little bit more in person. Those will be in March and September next year. And those are add-on as well. For the normal lifestyle program includes 4 virtual retreats, and then you would add on the in-person ones if you feel like that's a good fit for you. Okay. And I did get a question. Have we sent out this information? I am not totally sure if we sent out the information to everyone, but I will make sure it goes out in the next Inbox Insights. And also that you guys get your promo code for current members, so you're sure to receive that $1,000 off. Also, if you refer someone, you get a discount as well. And they end up joining, you get $1,000 off too. So we will include that all in Inbox Insights. You may have received something about the webinars. If you're already a member, you really don't need to include the webinars for next year unless you really want to. They're 90-minute calls, and I can just, all of the information is here on the website, but Adam and
Stephanie, I would actually somewhat negatively judge you if you were on those calls, because everything that we're talking about in those calls, you have likely heard more times than not. And through the filter of making the best use of your time as your limited commodity, that would probably not be the best use of your time.
Right.
Yeah. So if I see any names, I'm going to kick. Do I have your permission to kick them off if I see someone actually join someone in there?
I just want to know about the program next year, Adam. I mean, you could join the last 30 minutes. That's when we'll go over the program specifically. Yeah. But you really can get everything. Like, just let us know. You're already members. We'll make sure you get a promo code. If you have any questions about what you're interested in, just email us at coaching. So we won't make you sit through a 90-minute webinar to hear about the program.
Adam, on your monthly cohort calls, I'm going to that. Finally going to that practice acquisition next year. Is it reasonable to think that we could utilize those calls for things related to that as that transition happens and kind of off the normal?
Absolutely.
Schedule? Okay.
I mean, the only thing that I think that we will likely, and this is just true in all of Limitless, that we'll, dare I say, ban or just not dive into compliance. We're just going to touch with a 10-foot pole just for obvious reasons. Investment philosophy, like the in the practice type, you know, we're not going to be doing case studies from a planning perspective or advice things, but anything else that deals with running the business / working on the business, there's really nothing that's off the table.
Okay.
So, and I do, again, I want certainly that to be your time. So what we will do is, from a planning perspective, the primary focus of that is going to be coming to the calls with maybe a couple of starter questions, or if there's anything that's top of mind for the two of you or two of you, excuse me, for anybody that's in the cohort that we can certainly spend time talking about. But then we'll also have maybe themes that we can dive into during that call so that we do have, again, structure to that. I'm just thinking about what I do with my current coaching cohort and what we do. Like, it is a facilitated / guided conversation. Yes, it's open season for any time we have questions and anything that's top of mind, because just as we say with clients, I have my agenda, but what I ultimately care about is that you get your questions answered. So is there anything that's top of mind or has your attention that you want to focus that you want to focus on today? That will primarily be the focus. We'll also have some backfill type areas that we can spend some time working on as well.
Okay, awesome. I don't see any other questions in the Q&A.
When you were explaining something, there was something that came up in my that I thought of, and I didn't write it down, and now I can't remember what I was going to say or what I was going to. Maybe it'll come to me.
Retreat workshop dates are on that website as well. We will be in Charlotte in March, and then we'll be back in Denver for the fall. So those are there. We've got a few questions about that as well.
And then that join the VIP waitlist button on one of your emails on September 5th, That's just, again, like you mentioned, that's just the wait list. There's yeah. further steps. So, okay.
Yeah, that's the wait list so we know you're interested and we can see, you know, who of our members we're going to, we have the promo code for you guys. Okay. So I'm trying to get the promo code. I just put it in our team chat so I can drop it in here for you all. If I don't have it by the end of the call, I'll just make sure it goes out in the next inbox insights. Regardless, we'll honor for any members. You'll get that $1,000 discount no matter what.
Okay. Then yeah, delete my email I sent in while we're on the call.
Okay.
Now,
thank you,
Francis. Now I remember what I was going to say when you were talking about it, Allison. I was essentially in Limitless for free in 2019 because I referred so many advisors that my referral bonus more than covered the tuition. So both, in fact, Ben and I, Ben Brandt and I had a little competition going as to who could refer more advisors. And Steph technically had to say, well, you can't make money on the program. You can just be in here for free because we both referred so many advisors that from a technicality standpoint, like we would have earned more in referral bonuses than what tuition was. So we had the joke. It's like, so can we get paid for sending? And like, well, we were very much tongue in cheek in that comment, but
trying to hack the system, Adam.
We did try and hack it a little bit.
You know, and at Retreat, we had questions. People that are entering their third year, we did decide to make sure we honor the legacy price for you guys. So moving forward, it will start year four. But if next year's your third year, we know you were counting on that being your legacy price. So you have the legacy price of $3,600. That includes all your coaching calls, group coaching calls. That includes website, tribe, and 4 virtual retreats for that price. So you guys get a one-time grandfathered in year 3.
If you wanted the live, if you wanted to come to the retreat lives, that is still going to be an add-on, correct?
You would add that on, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you for that, Allison. Appreciate the update and yeah. Additional info.
You're welcome.
Any more questions? I mean, I'm happy to give people 13 minutes of their time back, but I certainly want to make sure that anything that's on someone's mind that we're giving ample time to.
Hey, Adam, this is Danielle Harmon. I'll throw a question out there for you.
Yeah, dude.
So I am an independent advisor, totally solo, no admin or anything. And I am looking at the possibility of joining a team of advisors who are going to be retiring in the next 10 years. It's 2 advisors. And I would just love to hear your initial thoughts on things that I should be thinking about when I step into that firm, because I've been mainly doing project work in my own business and they are AUM advisors. Mm-hmm. And I've worked in that space before, so I'm not new to the industry or anything like that, but my brain is very much in that project-based work and they have a lot more volume of clients than I do. And so I'm just curious if you have some tips or thoughts on that.
So would you be the successor then? You would be looking to buy that firm?
Yes, eventually.
So we go from not having any questions to going something that could probably take up another 45 minutes. Thank you for that, Danielle. No.
Right.
So my, as you were saying that, retirement the next 10 years, the first, like get it in writing. I mean, you need to have a formal buy-sell agreement that is, again, I'm just going to shoot, go from the hip here, and in no particular order, the thoughts that came to my mind. Advisors, dare I say, more so like almost any other business out there, but certainly like any other type of intellectually based business, like attorneys, CPAs, et cetera, maybe not even CPAs, we have the ability with a handful of clients to punt our own retirement a lot further in the future than we need. One could arguably make the case, why would anybody ever retire from this business? Because you could hire a couple of great team members, maintain ownership, show up a couple times per year to see maybe your top 20 clients and have everything outsourced and essentially never retire. So when you look at the net present cash value of, all right, how many multiples of cash flow would I get if I sold the business versus just hanging onto the business, even if I have to spend more money to hire a team and thus decrease my net operating income, if I can hang on to that NOI for, you know, 10 times longer than what the multiple that I'm getting by selling, I would still come out ahead. So that would be the first thing to become crystal clear about with this conversation is, what is that timeline? What's the formula that's going to be used? And when are they going to put something in writing that essentially holds them accountable to not having every year become next year? Does that make sense?
Yes.
Now, assuming that might have been a Captain Obvious statement, but that was the first cautionary flag that came up in mind. The second would be, outside of the normal things of getting the breakdown of the client base, number of households, meetings per year, you know, what their service model is, and reconciling that against yours. This is one of those that, you know, if you've been in that world before, but you're not doing it right now, why is that? Do you, quote unquote, for lack of a better word, believe in the AUM model, or is the niche client that you're working right now, like mine, not conducive to the AUM model, and therefore that's not why you're doing that? And that may be a semi-rhetorical question. We can dive into that now if you want, or you can share if you want now, but that would be something that I would give thought to as well, is, do you want to serve an AUM-based business or not?
I think it's a fair question, because I've asked myself the same question.
Okay. Because if you're not going to be embracing the business model and the service model, that will show up in those true colors will show up. Best case scenario, they only show up in your own mindset, in your own psyche, which is like the best worst case scenario, because you don't want that baggage emotionally. You don't want that game of tug of war of, like, you, again, for whatever reason, you not, there's friction between the business model and how you want to show up. Worst case scenario is it's such a disconnect for you that it actually shows up in the client relationships that you're serving.
Interesting. Okay.
So that would be the other question that came to mind. And then, for not to discount it completely, but then it just becomes a matter of fit and personality. What, or not really fit and personality, but fit in infrastructure. What's the client base look like? Are they used to meeting in person, but you're used to meeting virtual? What's that going to mean from a geographic standpoint? From a time standpoint, what are their expectations about your involvement in the firm? What are you wanting to invest from a time standpoint? That was something that Steph has talked about a couple of times, where, you know, some projects that she has been asked to work on, she's been very clear that, look, Limitless takes this amount of time. My kids and my family are this amount of time. I can only allocate this time. And there have been opportunities that have presented themselves and they're wanting more of that. And she'll be like, thanks, but that's not something I'm willing to compromise. So, be clear around how what you're spending from a time right now would be reconciled against what they're willing to, or what they're wanting you to work in. Would you be getting anything for your business right now if you fold into them? Would there be a check exchange for the equity and the enterprise value of your practice as it sits right now?
There's not a tremendous amount of value because I've been project based. But I would bring a few clients with me, and I would, you know, take that into consideration.
Yeah. Yeah. What's their team look like right now?
What does their team look like?
Yeah. How many, you said it's two advisors. What's the rest of the infrastructure look like? Yeah, service advisor, planning department.
They have one like client service associate, and then someone who does like trading and higher level admin work.
Okay. Would this be 100% takeover, or would you have future partners? Like, are any of their existing team members also part of the succession plan where you would essentially be in partnership with someone?
No, the other team members would not be potential partners down the road.
Okay. But you would be partners with them for the next X numbers of years, potentially 10 years until.
Yes.
Okay. I would suggest reading the book, The Partnership Charter by David Gage, G-A-G-E.
Okay.
It is, he's a clinical, I'm sorry?
I think I have it.
Okay. There you go.
Awesome. Yeah, I guess I just need to read the whole thing.
Yeah. Spoiler alert, he spends the entire time talking about why you shouldn't be in a partnership, but if you're already in one or you're just adamantly going down that path, he will mm-hmm. help you navigate the decision-making process, conversations, do's and don'ts through that partnership process.
No, that's great. This is good. Thank you. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Much. You're welcome.